Hello, gorgeous people, and welcome to another TV Central 101 podcast. I'm Aaron Ryan. This is episode 10, 2024. Creative Types with Virginia Trioli is a new six-part series in which award-winning journalist, broadcaster, and unabashed arts fan Virginia Trioli explores the essence of creativity with some of Australia's greatest artistic minds. Drawing from all platforms, acting, directing, writing, visual, and performing arts, each episode showcases creative Australians at the peak of their talents and tells the story of their journey to the top. Two-time Walkley Award winner Virginia Trioli is one of Australia's best-known journalists with a reputation as a television anchor, radio presenter, writer and commentator, and combines a rigorous interviewing style with a wicked sense of humour. She's been the host of ABC TV's premier news and current affairs programs, 7:30 and Late Line, also Artscape and Sunday Arts. She was the founding anchor of ABC News Breakfast on ABC TV, which she co-hosted for 11 years, and was the alternative host of ABC TV's Q&A since its inception in 2008. Along with Creative Types, Virginia continues her Weekend Reads column on ABC News Online, as well as her podcast, You Don't Know Me. Well, perhaps after this podcast, You Don't Know Me will become You Know Me a little better. A big welcome and thank you for joining me, Virginia Trioli.
Oh, Aaron, what a delightful interview and introduction. Thank you so much.
No worries. I would love to know first your passions, because the first word that comes to mind when I think of you is versatility, whether it's politics, arts, news, community, conversation, interviewing, storytelling, or just bringing people together. You've really done it all and there is no easy box to put you in. Is there any particular area, topic, or interest you are most passionate about?
Aaron, you're one of the few people who's clocked that. It's interesting. There are a lot of people who always try and peg me in boxes, and I think to myself, "Nah, I'm a restless mind. I actually love doing it all." And when people say to me, "Oh, do you prefer radio or TV?" I genuinely can't pick, because they all have their own skill sets that are required. They create a different kind of intimacy or a different kind of connection or conversation, and I love them all. But if there's one abiding passion, it probably is this. I have been an unabashed fan of, you know, creative Australians since my really early days. I got into journalism via a very unusual route. Normally people might do a journalism degree or that kind of thing. When I started as a cadet at the Age newspaper 120 years ago, I'd got there via a degree in fine art history. So I was, you know, studying Renaissance paintings and the great Australian artists as well. Although I always do say that you can never really understand and have great insight into a federal political leadership challenge unless you understand a crucifixion. So a good working knowledge of a Renaissance painting of the crucifixion really prepares you for that kind of political moment, I reckon, Aaron.
Yeah. We probably can put you in the box about one thing you're passionate about, and this is just a guess. It's your dogs. I hear a lot about them. Cora, is it Cora and Marco? Tell me about your two special friends.
Oh God, can you hear them in the background? Are they bleeding into the broadcast? Marco's going nuts outside right now. I never really considered myself a huge dog person, but you know, life and love and family changes you into something else. So we have Cora, the Black Labrador. She's a reassigned guide dog. So she came to us with beautiful manners and just impeccably behaved, which of course, you know, we've gone on and destroyed as the years have gone by, and she's become, you know, terribly badly behaved, but she's sweet as pie. And then during the pandemic, my son insisted on the old pandemic puppy, and he chose just the most obscure breed of dog, Aaron. He chose a Caissoned, otherwise known as Dutch barge dog. And the way he describes it is, if you pick up a Samoyed and if you shove it in a bag of coal and sort of wrestle it around in there and pull it out, it'll come out with a dirty, sooty face and slightly greyed fur. And that's exactly what a Caisson looks like. And he's as naughty as all get out, Marco. He's the absolute devil incarnate, but I do love him.
I think I'd need a moment for that visual picture there.
It's a good description.
As mentioned in your intro, you were the founding anchor of ABC News Breakfast, and you've hosted the morning program on 702 ABC Sydney for 3 years and part of ABC Melbourne Breakfast for 4 years, getting your audience through COVID and the 2022 flood emergency. Anyone in the industry will tell you breakfast television and even radio, of course, it's the hardest gig. It's live, live, live. And you're helping Australians through some big, tough times. Anything can change and anything can happen. Plus, of course, the early starts. How difficult was it for you? Does it take a toll on you? You know, is it a personal sacrifice?
No, look, I'm really glad you observed that. You're absolutely right. And we always say to each other, those of us who are in the breakfast game or in the morning game, that, you know, no one actually really understands or knows unless you do it yourself. And we all feel for each other, actually, and have a good understanding of just what that life is like. You live your life entirely by the clock. I mean, we all do to some extent, but there's nothing that's hanging over your head with more foreboding and doom than the clock. And you just spend the whole day chasing it, because you're chasing it to get to work in time, to get on air in time, to get those 3 hours, you know, that fast ride, hard ride in a fast machine done. And then the rest of the day is lived by the clock. I've got to get everything else done so that I can get to bed early. I've got to get, you know, everyone fed. I've got to get the kitchen cleaned. I've got to get that book read. I've got to get the homework done. I've got to get my kid in bed so I can go to bed, so I can go to bed, so I can go to bed. It's just this metronome, you know, that just beats the whole day long. How can I get to bed? How much sleep am I going to get? And yeah, it really does take a toll. Doing those 3 and a bit years on ABC Radio Melbourne, where I started, the day that I started, there was the smoke was in the air from the, you know, the bushfire emergency that was about to happen, of that terrible black summer. Then we had the bushfire emergency, and I was actually caught in the middle of that at Bermagui, which was the town that almost went under, except for a wind change with 15 minutes to go before the fire hit the town. Then we had all of that. Then we were straight into COVID. And we were, you know, holding an entire community's hand every single day through, you know, the hardest lockdowns that were in Australia or in the city of Melbourne. Then we were into floods. Then we were into the cost of living crisis. And honestly, those 3 and a bit years felt like 10. They really did. And I think anyone who did that kind of broadcasting is allowed to say that about their working life, because it was really hard. It was hard for us. It was harder for our listeners. And we felt every bit of it. You know, I had days where I had to send my producers out of the control room and just say to them, just go and take, you know, 15 minutes and have a cup of tea and you know, dry your eyes. Because we had people calling in, you know, in an absolute state saying, my mum's at home, she's got cancer, I have to go out and shop to get food for her, but I can't find a mask. Virginia, where can I buy a mask? Because if I bring this home to my mother, I'm going to kill her. What do I do? And call after call was, what do I do? What do I do? Where can I go? The queues are too long. How do I get a vaccine? And my producers were just under such enormous pressure. And they felt every single one of those calls, because you really are a community. You know, you really are a group together, just trying to get this through this together. So yeah, it took an enormous toll. It really did. And I say that from the perspective of someone who absolutely loves local radio. And I love the community that you make and the meeting place that you make with local radio. But it was, yeah, it was a very, very difficult time.
Well, I have heard from people, and I hope that you do know that you were a beacon of hope for so many. Some people isolated and all they had was the radio, or some people that just didn't have access to information, like, where do I go? What do I do? And again, all they had was the radio. Let's move on to Creative Types, though, which premieres Tuesday, the 9th of April at 9 p.m. on ABC TV and ABC iView. You focus on some prolific influential and inspiring Australians. Can you give me an overview of the format of the series? Because it sounds like an interview type program with a focus not on just success, but also mishaps, all the things that I guess ultimately lead to their creative success.
That's right. So we were commissioned to make a 6-part half hour series called Creative Types with Virginia Trioli. I'm in the title, Aaron, which means they can't save me. That's pretty good. have to rename it if they want to give it to somebody else. And the premise, and we were really excited when the team and I, myself, the executive producer, Jay Balendra, and director Stamatia Maroupas, came up with the idea of actually allowing these people to spend a significant amount of time talking about and excavating and revealing the essence of their creativity and what drives them creatively. Because we hear from these people from time to time, but when we hear from them, they're you know, on the sell, they're spruiking. And they're happy to spruik because they've got a new play or a new book or a new film and they want people to come and see it. But that's a different way of talking. And what are the questions we ask them? We say, oh, you know, what was it like filming in Korea? Oh, what was it like working with Hugh Jackman? And, you know, that'll get you a certain kind of answer. But no one actually ever says to them, why do you do what you do? What drives you? What are the hills you've had to climb? Where have you got it wrong? You know, when you've done something badly or not as well as you have before, how have you picked yourself up off the mat? Who's helped you along the way? Who have been your great collaborators? Where does your inspiration come from? And what was fascinating was, you know, we went to some of the most high profile creative people in the country and some of the lesser known. And no matter who we asked, when we told them what we wanted to explore, they immediately said, I want to do that. I want to talk about that. I never get to talk about that. And it was simply a matter of whether in the very tight time frame we had, whether they were available to us. So hopefully some of those really great ones, and I won't mention them here, but they might, you know, be able to make some time for us for season two, because they love the idea, because that's exactly why they live. They live to make it. I had a really great conversation with an old mate of mine, Russell Howcroft, who you might know from the Gruen Transfer.
Yeah.
And now, of course, he presents Breakfast on AW. And he started with me on radio when I got him as a regular on my Jive program on ABC Melbourne. And he was talking about his son, who's a very talented young painter. And he sort of, you know, and he's an ad man and a bit brash and, you know his persona. And he looked at me with absolute wonder and he said, Virginia, it's unbelievable. He said, he has to do it. He has to paint. If he doesn't paint, he doesn't feel like he can live. And I said, yeah, that's, and he was telling me that story because I was explaining to him the premise of the show. And I said, that's the point. These people live a little differently to us. You know, when we went and spoke to all of them, they all had boxes and boxes of all the notebooks they've ever kept, you know, everything they've ever done, all the original manuscripts, all the original drafts of whatever it might be, because they've been doing it. And they've been doing it over and over again for such a long time. It's a drive they can't escape from. It's deep within them. It's a desire to tell stories and to tell stories that are meaningful. And they all talk about telling stories. And I think it's best summed up by the first thing Trent Dalton said to me when I rang him and I said, would you do this show? And he said, I will. He said, because creativity saved my life. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, I'm wired for destruction. You know, I come from a really difficult background. And he said, I was destined, such a great line. He said, I was destined to, I'll get it right, to spend my life just eating Red Rooster chicken and chips and watching reruns of Platoon. You know, that's all I was going to be, just slumped in front of the and drinking, you know, Bundy and Coke. That's it. But creativity, the thing that I realized I had inside me, this desire to tell stories, saved me. And the moment he said that, I thought, yep, we've got a show, because I reckon that's the uniting feature for all of the people we're speaking to.
Well, Trent Dalton is features in episode one. Of course, people that don't know, he's obviously known for his novel Boy Swallows Universe, which has turned into this massive global smash hit on Netflix. I've watched the whole series. It's awesome. His mother and stepfather both sold heroin and spent time in jail. And he lived with his father in housing commission in Bracken Ridge. Mm. He certainly didn't have obviously a great start, but obviously that creative mind simmered underneath. I imagine that you're looking at, so there was the before and kind of the after of Trent Dalton. I imagine you'll be exploring that the connection between the two and I guess, you know, bridging those two worlds together.
Well, that's exactly right. We do. And the thing is that the bridge between those two worlds is actually his creative self, and they're not separate. You know, he talks about that, how you know, he is his family, and that origin story is him, and that origin story is a wellspring for his creativity. And it all resides in the city of Brisbane, and Brisbane is the place and the map and the landscape, but also, you know, a key character in the stories that he tells. So they all link, and they all link for all of the principles of the programs, really. Raphael Bonicella, who is the artistic director of the Sydney Dance Company. I mean, his origin story is in a way just as difficult, but for a different reason. He was a young kid who clearly was gay and was different and was creative and wanted to wear multicolour leg warmers on the streets of La Garriga, a small town outside Barcelona where he grew up. His two parents were factory workers, and they were just bewildered by him. And his father never really accepted who he became and accepted his driving desire to dance and to keep dancing and then to choreograph dance and to go into classical and modern dance. He just, you know, couldn't get his head around it. And that was an enormous anguish for Raphael that he not only had to get past, but almost had to use as a creative force in the work that he did. So it's interesting how that kind of theme, you know, my parents did not get me, kind of comes through, you know, again and again.
I think it's episode 3, you interview one of my favourite people in the arts industry, the absolute gorgeous, talented, professional and super creative Marta Dusseldorp. Yes. I've done a long-form interview with her before. Also such a strong businesswoman and an advocate in the industry. What were the major takeouts for you after spending time with Marta about her creative journey?
Well, her creative journey is really interesting and brings another dimension to the whole series, which I love, because as you say, yes, you know, much loved, incredibly skilled. I don't think there's a harder working person in television than Marta. She told me something wonderful in the interview, a great line that I love to mention again, where she said there was a series, I think it was about 10 years, a period of a decade, where she said, "I spoke more scripted words than my own." So her whole life was just dealing with these massively long wordy scripts. She's shooting 8 hours a day, day after day on episodic network television, which, you know, like breakfast TV and breakfast radio, is some of the hardest work you can possibly do. So speaking more scripted words than her own. But what's fascinating about her journey and her contribution to this series is that she then made that leap that, interestingly, a number of female high-profile actors are doing in Australia, where they're getting hold of the means of production. So they've been in front of the camera, they're absolute professionals, they're, you know, at the top of their game when it comes to acting. But at a certain point, something's happened and they've turned around and thought, bugger it, I'll make it myself. Why don't I do this myself? Why can't I produce it? Why can't I be in charge of deciding which stories get told? And so her and her husband created Archipelago Pictures, and that's based literally at their kitchen table in their home in Hobart. And she's now made an extraordinary community, not only, you know, nationally with Bay of Fires, but locally and in Hobart, and particularly during the pandemic, with the wonderful theatrical productions that they've put on. And so that's a really interesting transition for a woman, you know, very similar to a lot of others in her generation who were, you know, rising stars and very talented and encouraged to believe that, you know, they could be anything they wanted in front of the screen, but that's where it stopped. You know, it was the blokes behind the camera and behind the screen who were going to run the show. And she's proven that wrong. And it's a fabulous story to hear.
Towards the end of the six episodes, you interviewed Tom Gleason. He's obviously known for Hard Quiz and obviously the comedy circuit. And don't forget Gold Logie winner. Tells people about. His bio says he doesn't care who might be offended. I often think, though, that there is more to Tom than just that cheeky, sometimes offending type of humour we see. I think there's a lot of layers in history with him. Will we get to see a few layers in the series?
Yeah, we will, actually, because there's a very interesting origin story for him as well, which I won't spoil, but I think that's a big part of it. And, yes, you're absolutely right. But Tom Gleason is possibly, you know, one of the most intelligent people I've ever spoken to. He is such a thoughtful comedian. I mean, I describe him as the comedian's comedian, and many comedians in Australia really feel that, because he sets the standard for this incredible work ethic, for his just laser focus on getting the joke right. You know, he will work it and work it and rework it. And we sort of show this in our program about from a really early age how he's always done that. And he has such a sophisticated understanding of what is a joke, of what an audience wants, of how that relationship between the performer and the audience works. One of the uniting features between all of our subjects is, you know, what we like to call the 10,000 hours. You know, they're saying that in order to become an expert at something, you'll need to spend 10,000 hours working at it. And they all have. And Tom's 10,000 hours started in the very early days of university when he started doing stand-up. And he has never stopped. He's never stopped working at it and improving it. And spending time with him is just like being in the company of a masterclass when it comes to understanding comedy. You know, he gets it at such a granular level and can compare and contrast that comedian with this comedian, that approach with this approach. His knowledge of it is encyclopedic. He's a really fascinating character. I really loved spending time with him.
Just as an edit point, sorry, I'll edit this out. ABC said around 20 minutes and I've just hit it. Are you okay for two or three questions or do you want me to wrap up now with the last?
Go. Keep going.
I've skipped a whole heap. I could talk to you about lots of stuff. But anyway, so yeah, just two or three questions and then, because they said around 20 minutes. All right.
No, all good.
I wanted to ask you about the interview style that you're most known for, because it's not something easily replicated or that you often see. On one hand, the audience would describe you as warm, inviting, great sense of humour, but then you also are known for your investigative, sort of rigorous and perhaps no-nonsense approach to interviewing. I know many interviewers that are known for either side, one or the other, but you found that secret balance between being able to be in both worlds but remain authentic. So the question is, what is the secret?
Aaron, you're amazing. You're picking up on things that very few people have picked up on. I think you and I may have been married in a previous lifetime. So that's quite nice. Thank you. First of all, thank you for saying that, because I have, speaking of 10,000 hours, I have deliberately worked very, very hard at trying to hold those two elements in my interviewing all the time. And I think the secret is actually, you know, you may have heard this before and maybe you'll think it's a cliche, but it is the truth. The secret really is listening. It is just paying attention and being present in that moment. But you have to be present for everything. So, yes, you've got to be prepared, and I will have questions written down. And I will have absorbed them as best I can, depending on the time available. And sometimes you get a lot of prep time and sometimes you literally get none. You'll get someone in your ear saying, as I did when the morning the Queen died, and that's, you know, live rolling coverage where we just go straight into it and hopefully we've got enough talent to fill what ended up being 6 straight hours of coverage. You get someone in your ear saying the Prime Minister's called in, he wants to talk, and you just have to go. So, you know, there's absolutely no prep time there. But it is about attending, and that's the word that I'll use here. You have to attend to what they're saying, to how they're answering the question, to what they're not saying, to what their face is doing right now, to what their voice is doing right now. Mm-hmm. And that will then dictate your next question and your next approach. So maybe the first question that's brought about a certain note that I've heard in the voice might have been a rather tough question. But the note that I've heard means that the next question has to be different. It might have to be something as simple as, I can hear that you're struggling with this right now. Why is that? You're actually struggling to answer that. Can you tell me why? Or even, you know, do you need a minute here? Or it might be what I'm attending to and the what I'm hearing or not hearing or the way I'm hearing it being answered, the way I'm seeing it being answered might then require a different kind of response from me. So it's all about that. And if you have confidence in yourself, you trust yourself to be enough of a complete and decent person that you are going to actually be a person of good faith in this moment. And good faith might mean, no, sorry, mate, I'm going to have to ask that again because I think you're being tricky here. And I'm going to ask it, you know, even more harshly. Or, you know, acting in good faith means I have to attend to what I'm hearing here, and that is that this person is embarrassed or this person is ashamed, or this person is angry, or this person is sad. And I've got to, and everyone at home is hearing it, and they're going, oh shit, what's going on here? Virginia, ask what's going on here. And I will lean into that moment and I will ask it. So yeah, I think it's all about the work that I've done to actually just attend and be present in that moment. And I think that's the only way you can hope to get a good interview.
Yeah. Well, as we get near the end of this podcast, Creative Types looks at sometimes the two worlds your guests have lived in. Can I ask about your own? So obviously I'm talking to a strong woman at the top of her game and an example and mentor to so many aspiring young women especially. But you yourself were just a child full of wonder and creativity. What factors were in place that led you to where you are now?
I had those moments of having, you know, that great teacher. That teacher who saw into your soul and saw that you had something to offer. And I had a couple of those, and they will always, you know, live in my mind. They're the ones who gave me the, when I would spend hours poring over the book about ancient Egypt, would say, take it home and look at it and bring it back, you know, when you're ready. The English lit teacher who liked what I wrote and said, keep going, write me something else. I had a mum who was, you know, really encouraging of me and my talents, and I had a tendency to take on too much and to sign on to, you know, to debating and to drama and to dancing and to everything else. And she encouraged me to do that. That was really helpful. I had a large family of many siblings that was noisy and combative and rambunctious, and that sort of encouraged me, or I guess maybe required me to speak up. And to kind of, you know, to make myself known. Otherwise, I would have got lost under the waves. So it was that kind of upbringing where I just felt like everything was possible. I had a very ordinary outer suburban upbringing and went to the local high school, and was lucky enough to have good teachers. And I remember thinking that anything was possible.
Yeah. Well, finally, over the years, and obviously through Creative Types, you've spoken to people where out of the ashes of adversity came beauty. It might have been artistic people you've spoken to, but you've also heard stories, and you mentioned earlier on this podcast, of complete tragedy through things like COVID, floods, bushfires, and just other tragic news stories. There's often a sense of hope, though, with many stories, and often a sense on occasions of coming through the other end, you know, a strong, resilient and a successful human. For people that are sitting in that spot of adversity now, wondering if they will find, you know, that other side, from the stories that you've listened to and been part of, is there any insights you can give into finding that other side?
That's a lovely question. The thing that immediately is resounding in my mind as you ask it is the concept of connection. And it's actually only connection that's got the people that I've interviewed, or that in my life, or even for me, that have got me through those moments of adversity. And I think sometimes that's the hardest thing of all. And I know that many more people in this country are grappling with loneliness and disconnection than we've had before. So, and I suspect that actually might be for many people the adversity that they are dealing with, is just that sense of disconnection. And I know it might seem impossible to pick up the phone or to open the front door or to step out and to try and make that connection, but I actually believe that's the only reason we're here. We're here on earth to make connections and to forge connections with each other and to foster connections between other people as well. However you do that, you know, to do that positively and to experience the joy that comes from those connections. So I think it is that, and I suspect anyone who might be listening to our conversation now, Aaron, and hearing this, I'm pretty sure in the back of their mind there is something that will connect with that, where they'll go, yeah, I know that means that I really should, you know, write that letter or call that person or join that group, you know, or go across the road with my dog to the park and just walk up to that person who has that cute little dog and just say hi. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as that connection. And that is meaningful, and that is sustaining and nourishing. And I think that's what gets you through.
Yeah. What a beautiful way to end this podcast. But Virginia, really looking forward to the new series. And thank you for not only for your creative talent that you bring to your projects, but also for being a trusted, warm and truth-seeking journalist and presenter that has helped us all navigate through some pretty scary and hard times over the last few years. So thank you for joining me at TV Central.
Aaron, this has been an absolutely beautiful interview, and I don't say that about many of them, and I don't enjoy a lot of them, but I've absolutely loved spending time with you. You're a really insightful interviewer, so thank you. That means a great deal to me.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. All right, that was Virginia Trioli, presenter of the new six-part series Creative Tights, which premieres Tuesday the 9th of April at 9 p.m. on ABC TV and ABC iView. You can check out Weekend Reads column on ABC Online and listen to her podcast, You Don't Know Me. Well, that's it for this podcast. For all the latest television news and streaming news, head to tvcentral.com.au. But for now, I'm Aaron Ryan. Thanks to the wonderful Virginia Trioli. Bye for now.